session number 25185, real one.
In 1922.
Wilfred Osborne, Reel 1. Can I ask you when you were born and where that was?
I was born in 1922 in a village in Kent called Goudhurst.
And what is your exact date of birth?
The 28th of January 1922.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family background? What your father did, for example, and where you lived, what sort of house you lived in, and that sort of thing?
Well, I was born in the attic of my grandparents' house. My father, like his father, worked on the farm, although my father was a musician and went through the war in the East Kents, and he was in the band, and he was asked to stay on, but he'd had enough of army life, so he came out, eventually worked on the railway in London. That's where he met my mother, and they decided they were going on strike, and he didn't believe in strike, so he came back home and went to work on the farm. My mother was a nanny for a rich family in London, and they also had a country house in Goudhurst, and that's where they carried on their courtship. They were married in 1921, and I was born in 1922. We then were moved into a council house, which were then being built, and that's where I spent my childhood, in this council house. I went...
Can you tell me about that house? What was it like? What were the facilities?
Well, it didn't have all the mod comms, but it was better than... My mother wouldn't go into a tired cottage. She was rather independent, and she felt that if Father got the sack, we would have something to live. We did have a bathroom, but it had no taps, and if you wanted a bath, you had to boil the water in the copper and then transport not only the hot water but the cold water as well, so you only had a bath once a week. But we were much better off, and as I was the only child and we had three bedrooms, we had plenty of space. My father's sister lived next door. They had altogether about seven children that lived, and quite a few that died. So whereas we had plenty of room, they were rather cramped. And wages weren't all that good, but the rent that my father paid was 8 and 6 a week, which out of 36 shillings a week, farm workers' wages, didn't leave a lot to live on. But we survived, and as I was the only child, I was better off than most. I started school when I was 5 at the village school. I can still remember now my mother taking me and sitting in the headmaster's front room waiting to go to school. And then I was taken in and introduced to Miss Crouch, who was the teacher, and that started my school life. And we did have any chance of going to higher school unless you had money, so I spent all my school years at Goudhurst Church of England School.
What was the school like? How many pupils were there, and what were the classroom sizes?
The classroom sizes were quite good, and I would say that there were 130, 150 children, because Goudhurst was quite a large village, and it also had a lot of farming community, so you know it drew on quite a big area. There were 5 classrooms altogether. The infants were in a section all on their own, and then you moved to the next section. And when I see now, because I live opposite a school, how the children go out to play and games. I mean, we went into our class, sat at our desk, and the only time we left it if we wanted to go to the toilet or went out to play. There was none of this careering round like there is now. It was you sat there and the teacher took all the lessons, English, history, arithmetic, you know, mathematics or arithmetic, and that's how you stayed.
What did you do with your spare time when you were a child growing up in Kent?
Well, we used to play out in the road, all the games, hopscotch. It's sort of went in seasons. In the spring, it used to have a hoop and a stick and a nail and run those along the road. I mean, there was very little traffic. To see a car come through our village was something out of the ordinary. So you had the freedom of the roads, not like now. Then you would play with your tops, you know, on that was a top with a piece of string and a stick, and you had to keep it up, and you hit the top, and that continued it to rotate. In the autumn, it was conkers. And you had to make your own amusement, especially when you up till you were 12, 13. I belonged to the Cubs, and then I went into the Scouts. I was also in the village choir for quite a while, but I left. I won't go into why. That was the village life centred round the church. The church was a central pivot, and depending if you were Church of England or Methodist. Although, as I got older, and most of the better-looking girls were all Methodists, so unbeknown to my mother, I used to go to the Methodists. I used to say I'm going out, and I used to meet the Methodist girls with the other lads, they were much. That was much nicer.
Tell me about the Scouts. Do you have any memories about being in the Cubs and the Scouts?
Yes, we used to go to church parades. We used to meet once a week. We were very lucky that one of the Cub mistresses' father was a millionaire who lived in the village. So most times when we went on church parade, we went in the Rolls Royce, and I mean, all the others used to come in lorries and that, and we used to roll up and get out from a big Rolls Royce. We used to go camping. One of the farmer's sons was sweet on the other Cub mistress, so he used to let us go and camp in his fields, but that was only in the village. I then joined the Scouts and carried on for quite a while, but when I left school, I discontinued that because I was very friendly with a friend of my father, and I used to go and work with him in the evenings in the garden. I was more interested in that, and that's what I really wanted to do.
How old were you when you left school?
I was 14.
And did you have any qualifications?
No piece of paper. We never had any homework. We just went to school, did our lessons. We had exams, but it didn't matter if you came top, middle or bottom. And you went up by age. It didn't matter how clever you were. And I was always in the first three, but I still, especially when in standard four, I think I was in there for 2 years, and it was just doing the same lessons, you know, it got a bit boring. Standard five was better. And then the last year was, I was the school prefect, and we used to do gardening and woodwork, while the girls used to go into cookery classes, which was a house next door. But schooling was vastly different than what it is today. And unless, as I said, if your parents had money, or you had some what they would call a sponsor now, you could go. There used to be a grammar school at Cranbrook, which was quite renowned, but quite a lot of people went there who made quite a name for themselves. But my father couldn't afford to send me, so I had to stop at the Church of England school. As I said, I left when I was 14. My mother was adamant that I wasn't going to work on the farm. She was fed up with father coming home wet through and muddy and that, and she said, no, you're not doing that. And ironically, I got a job as a garden boy with a retired surgeon commander. But the farm that my father worked on, there were three brothers, and they were putting up new wire work in the hop garden, and they wanted a boy to put the hooks in so that my uncles could put them up on top of the wire. And much to mother's displeasure, father volunteered me, and I worked there for a fortnight. But she thought perhaps I would go on to the work on the farm, but I eventually went and worked as a garden boy for this retired commander. And I worked there till I was 16 and a bit. In the meantime, mother always used to go to the village on a Saturday afternoon to do the shopping. And in the late winter, when I was 15, she brought home the application and the booklets to join the Navy. And father didn't want me to go. He saw what service was like, and he didn't think I should go. But mother was adamant, and she won the day. I went to Chatham. I did the entry course, medical, and I passed.
At this time, were your parents, and indeed were you, aware of the impending war?
Well, not really. We did have a radio, but and we used to have a newspaper, but I mean, there was so much going there that you didn't take much notice of it. When I joined, I thought I was just going to join the Navy and see the world sort of thing. And then never in my wildest dreams did I think that I'd be fighting a war.
Can you tell me when it was exactly that you joined the Navy?
I joined March the 28th, 1938.
And can you tell me about that experience, the day you joined the Navy?
Well, I caught the 9 o'clock bus to Maidstone, and I got to Maidstone. I'd been there before, prior, when I, you know, went up for my exam, so I knew where I was going and what to do. And I got to Maidstone, and I asked the bus inspector, can you point me to the next bus to Chatham? And he pointed to one over there, because I got on the bus, but he didn't tell me that this was the bus that went all round the Medway Valley. And instead of getting to Chatham in half an hour, I arrived an hour late, much to the chagrin of the recruiter, because I had to go into Chatham barracks again for another medical, and then catch the train to London to Whitehall. So I was running late all the time. And I eventually got to Whitehall, and it was crowded. I mean, there must have been a lot of people thought that the war was, because it was full up with people wanting to join the Navy. And one thing that I can still remember is that there were two Cockney lads there who wanted to join the Navy. But their education wasn't up to standard. So I can remember now the recruiter saying, "Here's some papers, go away and come back in a month's time and perhaps you'll pass." I got the half a crown, and then I was taken across to Liverpool Street to catch the train to Harwich. And because all the other boys that had accumulated in Whitehall had gone on before me. So I arrived at Harwich around about 8 o'clock that evening, was met by a PO and taken across the river to Shotley. I went into the new entries block, and there was my supper on the table, and it was a plate of macaroni cheese, and I think that I must have had it all that was made, because it was tremendous. And there was me trying to eat this, and the PO could see that I wasn't getting on very well. He said, "You don't have to eat all that." I said, "Thank goodness for that." And I don't think I've ever eaten macaroni cheese since. Went into the dormitory, collected my blankets. No sheets, no pillowcases, just three airy blankets. And having been an only child and sort of cosseted more perhaps than others, it wasn't a very nice night's sleep. We were shaken at 6 o'clock, and we were told how to fold the blankets, and it had to be done in a special way. It's no just folding them up and chucking them on the bed. They had to be so. We were then told that there would be cocoa and biscuits. Again, I'd always been used to good biscuits. It came a bit of a shock to find the hard tack biscuits and the horrid cocoa that was there. The first part of the training wasn't too bad, although I couldn't swim, so we had to do a lot of extra swimming. But what put me off the actual swimming was that the lieutenant commander, who was the new entry officer, was also the Navy swimming champion, and he had no time for non-swimmers. And he took all the non-swimmers to the middle of the bath, and he pushed me in. And all my life went, my few years went before me, and it took me a good 6 months to even take my feet off the bottom. I just lost all confidence, and I feel that was the silliest thing that anybody could have done.
You said you started your training at Shotley?
Yes.
Would this be HMS Ganges?
HMS Ganges, yes.
You said that on the first evening that you arrived, you were issued with your blankets and so forth. Were you issued with your full kit at that stage, or
no,
did that come later?
No. The next thing was the inoculations, haircut, and then we were taken into the main barracks and we were kitted up. And it was all stamped, and then we had to take it back to the dormitory, and then we had to sew our names in. And that all had to be done in the month that we were doing our new entry training. We were taught how to march. We went to school, because they had a system where if you were clever, you went as an AC boy, and if you weren't, you were a GC. I didn't come in the first category, so I finished up as a general service boy, or general GC boy.
What did your initial training consist of?
Marching, tying of knots, gun, rifle drill, shooting, boat sailing, and, you know, everything that would prepare us for life on board ship. And the actual training for a GC boy was 9 months, and a AC boy was 15 months. They did more schoolwork than we did.
Was that your whole... You're talking about the whole period, not the initial entrance period?
No, the first new entry was a month, and then you, on the Saturday, you were marched across, and some boys went as signal boys, some went, and the rest, AC boys went into a different mess, or they joined up with another class, and the bulk of us formed one mess. And on the Saturday afternoon, we were put through at what to do for Sunday parade the next morning. I always remember that because our instructor couldn't have been more than 5'2", and he was as fat as he was tall. And we weren't doing very well. And so he demonstrated what we had to do in slow time. And I'd never seen anything so funny in all my life. And I burst out laughing. Because that was the worst thing I could have done. And he came and twigged my, nearly turned my ear off for laughing at him. Anyway, we got over that and settled down to, you know, our training. We had to go over the mast. That was another experience. It was quite a high mast at Shotley, and you had to up, across and down in 3 minutes. If not, you went back again. So you always made sure that you did it in the right time. Unfortunately for me, being probably a country lad and not living in close proximity as a lot of the people did, every complaint that was going, I seemed to catch. I started off with German measles, whereas most of them left after 2 or 3 days, I was still in the sick bay. I was transferred from the isolation to one of the main wards, and I had x-rays. And then I had sent home on summer leave, and I was still in the sick bay. On the Saturday, I was declared fit. But before we went, I was given an injection because there was an epidemic of diphtheria in there, and they wanted to make sure that I hadn't got it, and gave me an injection. They said, oh, you're all clear. I went home, and on the Sunday, I just sat on or laid on the couch. Monday, wasn't much better. I didn't get up on the Monday. On the Tuesday, my mother got worried and sent for the doctor. And I was sat up in bed with 3 or 4 pillows. And the first thing he did was to snatch all the pillows from underneath me and said, lay down and don't move. And he said, you've got diphtheria. And he organised for the ambulance to take me to the isolation hospital in Cranbrook. We went, and it was funny that 2 doctors came round, and one was the resident, and another one was a friend of the doctor. And he examined me and said, all right, and gave me the usual injections or whatever they did. And I was in there for nearly a month. During that time, a little girl was brought in from the hot fields, and she had to have an injection in her throat to help her to breathe. By then I was getting better, but she had to have a night nurse, and I, being a young sailor, started to chatter up, and then we were talking. And I said, I feel sorry for the little girl. And she said, why? I said, well, she'll have a scar for the rest of her life. But I was lucky, I didn't have to have any of that. Next morning, matron was doing her rounds, and she came across and she said, what's all this about you being lucky? I said, well, I was. She said, believe me, she said, another 24 hours and you would have been dead. She said, you had one of the worst cases of diphtheria that we've had for a very long time. As I said, I was in there for a month, and that was August, and I eventually went back to Shotley. I was told, ordered back in the end. I couldn't walk properly, but I was told that as I, could move my legs, that I was fit to travel, and I had to go back. They didn't put me on light duty. I couldn't run, and for another 6-8 weeks, my legs were just stiff, but being the Navy, I had to get over it. I was back class, and I eventually left Shotley in the July of 1939.
Can you tell me or describe a typical day at HMS Ganges?
Yes, we were called at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, you made up your beds, as I said, properly. You stowed all your kit away. You then fell in outside. In the meantime, the cooks went up and got the cocoa and the biscuits, still the same ones, and then you were detailed off for work until breakfast time. You then fell in outside while the cooks went to the galley to fetch the food. It was then put out on the table, and you were then marched in. Grace was said, and you had your breakfast. You then prepared for the forenoon. You fell in on the parade ground and had divisions, and then you either marched off to school, gunnery, or seamanship. And this went on till 12:30 when you went to dinner. If you weren't duty division, then it was games, recreation, and being whatever season, football in the winter, rugby, cricket, and swimming, and etc. And that went on till tea time. You had your tea, you fell in again, fell in on the parade ground and went to evening classes. That finished at 6:30, and then you had your supper, and the rest up till 9 o'clock, the time was yours. And then you turned in, and that was it.
What did you do with your spare time?
That's a good question. We generally sat and talked, or did your sewing or anything, or clean your boots, and more or less prepare for the next day. Some mornings you were called early because you were an early morning dobian, and you went down to the washhouse, did all your dobian, put it in the spin dryer, and then hung it up on there, and then collected that later in the day. And if you were lucky, you could get an iron. But we weren't allowed to smoke, but cigarettes did appear, but on most occasions not matches. So there was always some clever dick could get a couple of flashes from the iron socket to light the cigarette, but in doing so probably fused it, so ironing was generally out of the question anyway. But other than that, we did have concerts and cinema once a week, And there were several things going on, but as I say, you were more prepared to for the next day, so, you know, you didn't do much of that.